The mild winter we had meant a lot of things. Hardly any ice on the Great Lakes, scant pond hockey, and very few sledding days. But it also had an impact on things that are a little less obvious, like how some creatures survived the cold months, particularly pests. We had stateside producers bit by mosquitoes in February. But we're even more curious about a new pest in town, ticks.
Instead of waiting till March or April to be active, they'll be active whenever they can in January, February, and March. So then they are just kind of getting their game on, let's say, you know, earlier.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Here to talk with us about what we might expect of Michigan's growing tick population is Jean Tsao, professor with the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife at Michigan State University. She is our very favorite tick expert. What's the macro view of how tick populations in Michigan have been growing and changing over the past 10 years?
The tick populations in Michigan have been expanding in their range, even starting in the early 2000s, but certainly down in the southeastern area of Michigan, I would say that's been happening more so in the last 5 to 10 years. And part of that is just that these ticks are great at invading new places, but they still take a little time because they don't fly. So they either go on the backs of small mammals or on large deer or sometimes on the backs of feathered friends. These are birds, but it takes them a little while to move across a landscape. And so that's why, although they came in the southwest of lower Michigan, in southern Michigan and went up the coast, it took them a little longer to be spreading across southern Michigan. And the same thing is happening across the northern lower. And obviously our first populations of these black-legged ticks that cause Lyme disease were discovered in the late 80s in Menominee County in the Upper Peninsula, but it's taken them a while up there to just spread in that peninsula.
They're making gains, though. I guess everybody's got to have a talent. I just wish theirs wasn't so vectory.
That's right.
Do you know anything about increases in vector-borne illnesses like Lyme disease that tend to be carried by ticks?
Yes. So especially Lyme disease is the most important or significant tick-borne disease in the northern U.S. And it is in large part because this tick, the black-legged tick, or listeners may also know as the deer tick, it's the same tick species, it's been spreading. And so as it spreads, it's been bringing along with it the pathogen that causes Lyme disease. And then also people may have been starting to hear about anaplasmosis, babesiosis, and then there's ehrlichiosis, and there's Powassan virus. But really in Michigan, especially because the ticks are just emerging, in some of these areas, Lyme disease is the most prevalent. The disease that most people know about with the dog tick is Rocky Mountain spotted fever, but that's really found in low levels in Michigan. But the Lone Star tick has been spreading in southwestern Michigan and cropping up in a few other places. And it carries several pathogens, but it's also associated with the red meat allergy. And so I think a lot of people will be scared of that.
I really appreciate what this is doing for your long-term career prospects, Jean, but I weep for the rest of us. How do ticks spend their winter months? Are they the kind that just goes to ground and goes dormant?
Yeah, for the most part, that is the case. And it depends on the tick species and it depends on the life stage of the tick species. So lots of listeners might have said, hey, I found a tick on myself or my dog in January this year or February or March. And that's because the adult stage of the Lyme disease vector, it actually can be active anytime the temperatures are above freezing, they say, but I would say more actively the high upper 30s and lower 40s, you'll start seeing them. And so with our milder winters, then these adult ticks can be active. And in years past or decades past, when it was cold and blankets of snow and such, those ticks would be, as you said, kind of dormant under in the leaf litter at that time. But now that it's warm, they'll pop up. And so that's why I tell people if you have dogs, especially, you want to have them on tick preventives even through the winter.
What would you say the mild winter means for tick life cycle or breeding? I mean, is there, you say that they may be present, but are they necessarily, reproducing or becoming more numerous if it's a warmer winter?
Yeah, so I think they can be. What happens is that the adult ticks that I was just mentioning that are popping up and being on deer or dogs in January, February, normally what would happen is they actually initially came up and were active in the fall. But then with the cold winter, they kind of go dormant and then they'll start coming out in spring. But what happens is when the winter is mild, instead of waiting till March or April to be active, they'll be active whenever they can in January, February. In the South, Southern US, they have this tick as well. And what you see is that they don't have such pronounced peaks of ticks in the fall and the spring. Instead of there's just this one kind of curve of ticks activity in the fall, a little dampened in the winter, and then also a little bit in the spring. Whereas here we say we have shoulders, usually two peaks, one in the fall, one in the spring. But as the winter gets more mild, that little valley in the spring comes back up and the ticks are active.
We need to take a quick break. More with Jean Tsao in a moment.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
What are you and your colleagues expecting with the tick population this year? I mean, we were just talking amongst ourselves saying we think we're seeing ticks earlier, but is that what you're observing as well?
Yes, I think, everyone is, we are actually are not out there doing sampling right now, but hearing from the public, hearing from our friends who have dogs and the veterinarians who are seeing animals with dogs, you guys are the sentinels out there. We are seeing more ticks earlier, and I think it just pushes it up earlier. And maybe, it's just like with anything, if your success, if you start earlier with trying to find a host, maybe a higher proportion of ticks will end up finding a host versus those that wait to spring. We really don't know about that. But with that, but with regard to the other life stages, then the ones that we're concerned about with causing Lyme disease, they right now they will have been dormant through the winter, the nymphs, and as it gets warmer, they'll come out. And what I always say to people is that that they are really good at overwintering. They have a high proportion of survivorship and they'll come out in full force. And as long as the weather is conducive, meaning it's warm and there's somewhat humid, especially down in the leaf litter, you'll have a lot of nymphal ticks out in May and June and such to bite people and potentially infect them with pathogens. But on the other hand, if we end up having a drought, like we did for much of last year, depending on when that drought happens, it could really dampen the tick activity because they're very prone to drying out.
Are tick populations growing in other parts of the US or the region this season, or have they been fairly stable?
I would say that in areas like Michigan and let's Illinois, Indiana, they have been growing because they have been spreading. The Lone Star tick is not just invading Michigan, but it's invading other states in the Great Lakes and also in New England. So I think overall, these northern regions are certainly seeing more ticks. And also down in the Southeast, and actually South Central U.S., this our tick, our Lyme disease tick here, is also spreading southward. And so climate change might be helping some of these ticks as they move northward, but other factors are helping ticks move southwards. And so in general, I think it's, I don't know if it's the century of the tick, you know, but they're what humans are facilitating tick spread.
Michiganders really aren't used to the whole tick thing, you know, in a generational kind of way, the way that much of the rest of the country, I think, deals with these pests. What should we know, Jean, about where and when to be concerned about ticks?
It's getting to be more so that you need to be concerned about ticks year-round. And that is because of this, the spread of this Lyme disease tick, and because of its behavior that the adult stages will be out in the winter if it's mild enough. And so especially for people who own dogs and people who might have some outdoor cats, they'll start seeing that their, you know, furry companion animals will be picking up ticks. And that means also that if you're walking your dog or if you're doing any additional yard work in the winter, that means you should be somewhat more concerned. Now, having said that, the epidemiological statistics show that we are pretty good at seeing the adult tick on us before it can bite or before it can bite long enough to infect us. So although people can get infected with a pathogen from the adult stage of the Lyme disease tick, most of the cases for Lyme disease and anaplasmosis still do happen in the late spring, early summer when the nymphal stage is out. So I've mentioned this before, the teenage stage. So the ticks come in like the baby stage, teenage stage, and then the adult stage. And it is the teenage stage of the Lyme disease tick that causes the most problems for disease vectoring.
Just because they're smallest and harder to detect?
Exactly. They're smaller. So the size of a poppy seed for the Lyme disease vector.
In my family, we always just went at them with a pair of tweezers. But what is the most effective way? Like, is there a proven way to get them off your body once you find them?
Tweezers is the best way. And so your family has been doing it the right way, the best way this whole time. You know, my suggestion to people is that because ticks are becoming a growing problem, you know, everyone should just get a pair of fine tip tweezers to have in their medicine cabinet at home, or have it even, you know, another pair in a fanny pack or somewhere in your car if you like to go outside and hike and such. But there are some other tools that one can use, and CDC and the Infectious Disease Society of America always say use some kind of mechanical device. So there's some tick keys, there's some tick tornadoes, but some tool that really helps you pull the tick out from the closest point of attachment. And different people may find different tools to work better for them, but I think tweezers would be the best.
How do you know if you should get yourself examined by a doctor? I mean, is there any way to tell, like, has this tick been on me a long time, long enough to spread a disease?
Yes. So in the lab, scientists, you know, looking at a picture, they can kind of guesstimate how long a tick has fed. But I would say number one is, first of all, when you find a tick on yourself and you first, you know, obviously remove it, don't throw it away. Keep it in a baggie or so, because then someone can identify that tick and then they can look at it and see generally how long it may have fed. And importantly, if it is the Lyme disease tick, then they can look at it and see from the relative size of the little shield on the back to how long the body has expanded. They can say, maybe it's fed more than 36 hours. And that is the cutoff time frame for when they say, if it's fed more than 36 hours, then if you're in an area with known disease, Lyme disease risk, that you are eligible potentially for antibiotic prophylaxis. So namely one dose of doxycycline.
Okay. So don't get rid of that thing after you pull it off.
Right. Because we need to know what species it is, because different ticks transmit different pathogens. And then number two, Has it fed long enough potentially to transmit the Lyme disease pathogen? But certainly we tell people, you know, obviously get the tick off you as soon as possible. But then if someone can ID the tick and look at how long it's fed, then you might be able to be eligible for a dose of prophylactic antibiotics. And if you want to, I highly encourage, we have the tick app. It's our mobile app that you can submit a photo to, a clear photo that then an expert can do those things for you. They can identify the tick and guesstimate how long it's fed for. The state health department also has, it's very cute. It's like find a tick, submit a pic program, and they can also, my photograph, do the same thing. And then Tick Encounter is, I think, a great resource for understanding ticks and tick prevention. They also have a program called Tick Spotters. So I would say go ahead and send photos to all three of these places, see who can answer you first, and then see if hopefully the responses are all agree. But then if all these folks say you should go see a doctor, and it's also good to know if, hey, don't worry, it's a dog tick, and so probably there's going to be not much disease risk, but certainly all of these programs will say to you, but continue to monitor yourself, because if you do see that you have symptoms of tick-borne disease, which generally are like flu and maybe flu-like symptoms and fever, you feel lethargic, if you feel that within 2 weeks of a tick bite, you probably should go see a doctor then.
Professor Jean Tsao of MSU's Department of Fisheries and Wildlife, her magnum opus, the Tick App, can be found at an app purveyor on your mobile device today. Jean, great talking to you. Thank you for all the updates.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for the podcast today. You can find full episodes of Stateside at michiganpublic.org. Stateside is produced by Mike Blank, Ronia Cabansag, Mercedes Mejia, and April Van Buren. Our podcast editor is Rachel Ishikawa. Today's pod was produced by our show's executive producer, Laura Weber Davis. Music for the pod comes from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.